Welcome to the Young Turks on an auspicious Friday. Go ahead and drop it. Michael Short, Jake Uger, Anna Kasparian. You know what's coming, guys. Hold, okay. Later in the program, who are the alt-right women? We have answers.
Oh, it's so interesting.
Genetic tests for white supremacists and their hilarious conclusions. You're going to love that story. You're going to love a lot of parts of this show. Without further ado, Anna, take it away.
All right. The White House has announced that they are parting ways with Steve Bannon, the chief strategist of the Trump administration.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Down goes Bannon! Down goes Bannon! What now? What now? Okay, yes. Of course, we're not really sure that we got him. There's an excellent chance he got himself, along with the entire Trump administration. I think that Trump still thinks he's on Apprentice. He has to fire someone every single week.
And almost every single Friday. I mean, Scaramucci was out on a Monday, but everybody else is on a Friday.
Right. Yeah. I mean, usually in a normal administration, the news cycle starts to die down. And by Friday, there's very little news to cover. But no, with the Trump administration, Friday tends to be a pretty explosive news day. And then the weekend gets even more explosive. So let me give you some background and context on what's going on, because there is a lot of drama and it's very, very good. Now, let's start from the beginning. The White House released a statement today indicating that they would part ways with Steve Bannon. Sarah Huckabee Sanders released that statement and said, "White House Chief of Staff John Kelly and Steve Bannon have mutually agreed. Today would be Steve's last day. We are grateful for his service and wish him the best." Now, of course, even though Bannon's gone, there are some senior White House officials who are still leaking to the media, and they say that it was not a mutual decision. I'll get to that in just a second. But there has been some foreshadowing of this earlier in the week when Donald Trump gave his super questionable press conference on infrastructure, which quickly devolved on a comment about how white supremacists are bad, just like how people on the left are bad. He did also touch on Steve Bannon, and here's what he had to say.
Feeling about your chief strategist, Mr. Bannon, can you talk about that?
I would echo Maggie's question. Steve Bannon has
come. I never spoke to Mr. Bannon about it.
Tell us broadly what you're, do you have, still have confidence
well,
in Steve?
Well, we'll see. And look, I like Mr. Bannon. He's a friend of mine. But Mr. Bannon came on very late. You know that. I went through 17 senators, governors, and I won all the primaries. Mr. Bannon came on very much later than that. And I like him. He's a good man. He is not a racist. I can tell you that. He's a good person. He actually gets a very unfair press in that regard. But we'll see what happens with Mr. Bannon, but he's a good person, and I think the press treats him, frankly, very unfairly.
So at that point, he was already gone. I mean, Trump is such a madman that there's some chance he would have retained him, but any other president who says, "We'll see what happens with that guy."
Right.
That decision's already been made.
Also, it's rumored that it may have happened weeks earlier anyway.
2 weeks
that
ago.
He's been there. And also Mr. Bannon. Bannon. I mean, it's like you don't, Mr. Bannon.
It's a distance. I also think that that he's a little scared of him. Because he has that Breitbart alt-right contingent. And he almost never calls anyone Mr. anything.
Well, if he was scared then.
I know. Well, that contingent is going to war. We'll talk about that in a second.
Yes.
But so that's why the context of Steve Bannon's, calling Robert Kuttner the American Prospect and saying the things that he did is
fascinating. I'm not sure it's that relevant anymore, but it is fascinating as to, because he said that after Trump said, we'll see about Mr. Bannon.
That's right, exactly. And so there are a lot of factors that kind of played into this eventual outcome. And I want to touch on all of those factors right now. So first of all, everyone knows that Bannon had a very tense relationship with several members of Trump's administration, including Jared Kushner, someone who he believes is this globalist. And by the way, people who write for Breitbart have been criticizing Kushner pretty aggressively. Then there's also Gary Cohn, the National Economic Council director, and then H.R. McMaster. Remember, Bannon used to be part of the National Security Council, and then he was essentially kicked out, and H.R. McMaster had something to do with that. So Bannon has been pretty salty about it since that occurred. Also, a senior administration official said Bannon had resigned on August 7th, but other officials noted that Trump had grown tired of his tactics and behavior and had been plotting ways to oust him. Ultimately, it was Kelly who fired him on Friday. In regard to Trump, there is some indication that he was furious with his chief strategist after he was quoted in an interview with the American Prospect contradicting Trump on North Korea and asserting that Bannon was able to make personal changes at the State Department.
Yeah, so only the president gets to make personnel changes. So when Bannon said, oh, I'm gonna fire this guy, I'm gonna put that person in place, that definitely got under Trump's skin. That touches his ego. That's the most important thing in the world. Again, it's not overly important now that Bannon is out. That's the most important news as to the chronology of this. This whole idea that, oh, Bannon wanted to resign anyway on August 7th, that's the part that's total BS.
Yeah.
Don't ignore that completely. He fought it all the way to the very end, and it appears based on the weight of the reporting that he was fired today. And as a face-saving gesture, they said, yeah, we'll let you call it a resignation, right? But now, ironically, because he was a huge leaker, they're leaking all over the place going, it wasn't a resignation, he got fired. So, I mean, my sense of it, Michael, is that he got, that Trump was, if he hadn't made up his mind, he was super close to it before Bannon gave that disastrous interview.
Yeah, I think that's, right, that's the irony, is that it came from giving an interview to a fairly liberal publication.
So in a sense, we got him.
Yeah, that's just where I was going with it. And if that wasn't just it, it was John Kelly coming in, as others have done before John Kelly in Donald, what they call Trump world, doing the same thing. You know, Trump, in that press conference that you just played, Anna, he said things like, you know, we won a lot of primaries, we went through, I don't know what he said about governors, but I don't know what that meant, before Steve Bannon got here. But to Steve Bannon's credit, he did a fantastic job in the general election of knowing exactly where to go and finding out where the people who didn't vote for, you know, in the primaries, didn't vote necessarily in past elections, or were, you know, really just wanted Donald Trump to be there, where they were, and helped target that election. So he was an efficient leader at that time. But as we've seen with Trump, he can dispose of Paul Manafort, who was coming in to clean house and make everything work. If John Kelly thinks he's got a job for the rest of his life, he couldn't be more wrong. So Trump, it's see you later, and that's the end of it with these people. Lewandowski, you know, comes in once in a while.
Well, as you saw with my prediction earlier in the week, luckily I think he's going to do it to himself at the end. Okay, Donnie, you're fired. We're done with this, and I resign. But well, that's for another day. But to your point, Michael, when he talks about all those states that he won without Bannon, that's him saying, remember, it was me.
Yes.
It wasn't Mr.
Right.
Bannon.
Yes. Okay. Right. Okay, so I mean, look, the number one offense in Trump's administration that will get you fired is hurting his ego in any way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
And if you take credit for anything in Trump's administration, he will find a way to fire you. And I think that definitely played a role in his eventual firing. I also think, though, that there was a fear that, or not just a fear, I think that there's reason to believe that Bannon was one of the leakers. And I don't think that that American Prospect interview, look, some outlets reported on that interview as if Bannon pulled a Scaramucci and didn't know that it was not off the record. Bannon's not an idiot. Bannon works in the media. He knew that it was on the record. He knew it was gonna get reported. I think that was him flexing his muscle to show Trump, I have a lot of influence in media, right? So
yeah, so that's a really interesting question. Yeah. That's a perfectly good hypothesis. I have two other hypotheses, which I haven't made up my mind between. Mm-hmm. One is that sometimes when you know something's going in a certain direction, and I've seen athletes do this a million times, you'll subconsciously throw it, right? And so him going on there, not clarifying that it's off the record and saying all this stuff is a way of going, throwing in the towel, I'm done with this, subconsciously. Possible, I'm not saying that's definite, and I know that that's pop psychology, I get that.
Yeah, right? And I don't know that he would have picked the American Prospect to throw the flag in there, because A, it's not well attended enough, and B, it's the American Prospect.
Yeah, the other thing that he might have done, because he's not as dumb as Trump, Trump wouldn't have thought any of this through. If Trump did this, I'd say, no, he was an idiot, he called the guy and that's it, right?
Yeah.
Is that he knew he was already getting fired, he saw that press conference, he knew that we'll see means you're done. He does this so he has a fig leaf for why he got fired, like Scaramucci, as opposed to, you know, you're too racist, you're too this, you're too that, and you were shown the door. This seems like, wow, okay, oh man, I screwed up that one little thing, and then that's why I got fired. And but really, otherwise I had it,
Right.
Right. So that's also another possibility. But the most important thing is that stuff doesn't really matter now that he's gone. The most important thing is that he's gone.
He's gone, and what I speculate he's gonna do now that he's gone, I think is way more relevant, right? And look, I know it's only speculation, but people believe that Bannon is gonna go right back to Breitbart. Why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
And he still has a considerable amount of influence over the type of reporting that takes place at Breitbart, which is why they've been so aggressively critical of all the individuals in Trump's administration that Bannon doesn't like and Bannon doesn't get along with.
Yeah, so one more thing. I think the fact that he's gone is great news for the country for several different reasons. Number one is he's the father of the alt-right movement, which is a white nationalist movement. Having that guy in the White House is toxic, and it's great and a great relief to see him gone. The second is that he's way brighter than Trump, and if he had done his exact populist strategy, not policy-wise, it would have been a disaster. But politically, it had some chance of working. If you went with an economic nationalism, like he told Kuttner at the American Prospect, that it's an ugly form of politics, but one that has potential, especially in a time of populist rage. Now without him, Trump has no chance of pulling that off. And now he's surrounded by Goldman Sachs guys, who the country basically hates. And now he's also taking some of his alt-right base with him, even if they're not going to vote for a Democrat, as a lot of them said, they're going to stay home. And that was the problem the Democrats had. So it's just a giant win-win for us and for the country that Bannon's out, because policy-wise, they won't go in as bad a direction without his guidance. And politically, I think it's done some serious damage to Trump.
Yeah, that's true. After Reince Priebus left the White House, I spoke to somebody who works at the White House, who said to me that there's always a calculation that they make. They sit down, they say, well, how much is this guy or this woman gonna hurt us from outside, right? And there was always the fear that Steve Bannon leaves the White House under bad circumstances, and it's bad for the administration, because he's gonna go out and he's going to just wage war against them and say what the secrets are, and et cetera, et cetera. And you know, afterwards today, Bannon gave an interview and he said that he is going to war, but he's going to war with the opponents of the White House, that he is going to spend his time going after the opponents of the White House, which you can believe that he would say today, but watch him in a week, watch him in a month, watch him in 3 months, because most likely he's got a chip on his shoulder about what happened and how it happened, but maybe not. I mean, there is he's lived in the shadows in some respect, and now he's gonna come out. I would say you called him the father of the alt-right movement. I'd say he's more the godfather. I'd say he's more, he didn't start it, he didn't bring it to Trump, he cultivated what was there. And I think that's even more dangerous, because he could do it now again in a double.
So, yeah, I hear you. And he'll of course attack the left. But he and I never had interactions. Actually, we met once at the RNC, but I'm of course using us as symbolically, in terms of, he doesn't like the left. But he's had 8 months of warfare against Gary Cohen and Jared Kushner and all those guys that he calls globalists, and especially H.R. McMaster. He's gonna go to war against them. That's his immediate target.
I agree.
It's like Cersei. We don't have time for the White Walkers. I'm gonna go after my opponents in Westeros first. Mm-hmm. And speaking of White Walkers, boy, with Steve Bannon, you got a hell of a White Walker, and he just walked out of the White House.
Yes.
So
yes. I don't know what any of that means.
But okay. Let's go to the next topic, which is what they're gonna do. Okay.
Right. So the reaction from those who are very supportive of Bannon and are not happy about him getting fired. Now that Steve Bannon has been fired, his supporters are increasingly vocal about their disdain for that decision and what they plan on doing in the future. Now, keep in mind that Steve Bannon brought along many of his supporters to go ahead and support Donald Trump, and now they're furious at Trump's decision to fire him. So let's go to some of the employees at Breitbart. Their tweets indicate that they're upset. One says that they want to go to war. Let's take a quick look at that. Graphic 7.
That's right. Joe Pollack, who works at Breitbart.
Exactly. And then Brandon Darby, who also works at Breitbart, responded to that with, "No, silly, we aren't going to war now. I really wish Trump well for the remainder of his one term," with a little winky face.
They're going to war.
Yeah. Now, that's telling, right? Especially considering the influence that Steve Bannon has over the articles that get published at Breitbart. But here is a Tea Party activist who has been very vocal in her support for Trump and how she feels now. Her name is Debbie Dooley, and she says, "I'm very upset. The deep state globalists won. They forced out Steve Bannon. I had a CNN is fake news protest scheduled for tomorrow at their headquarters in Atlanta that I'm canceling because I'm so disheartened. It's a betrayal of his base. I'll continue to support Trump and his policies, but I'll no longer be on the front lines defending him."
Man, that's a shame about that protest. It was going to have 3 to 4 people at it.
Right, and also their headquarters in Atlanta in 1987. I mean, just about everything that happens at CNN happens in DC and New York, right? Yeah. Including Zucker is in New York.
But there is very relevant parts of that. Two relevant parts are the deep state globalist reference. So they are now absolutely convinced that his alt-right base, that there are huge factions of the Republican Party that are against them, and that they hate more than they even hate liberals or whatever else is going on. That's their immediate war. And so the deep state that they refer to is the generals, and then the globalists are the Jews. So sometimes they refer to them as such, meaning that is certainly an interpretation of what globalist means. Now, other people argue with that. Stephen Miller is an alt-right white nationalist, and he's Jewish. And so
Joel Pollack is an Orthodox Jew who is at Breitbart, yes, as well.
On the other hand, Ben Shapiro left Breitbart, and he's been attacked in wildly anti-Semitic ways. So you know, but that's not that important. Globalist kind of means banker, financial elite, maybe Jewish, whatever, right? Like the powers that be that are behind the curtain, which has led to terribly anti-Semitic things in the past and led to disaster. But even if you remove the anti-Semitism out of it, it's like this idea that there's someone pulling the strings, and whoever they are, they're the ones in power, and we gotta get them, right? And again, that has led to disastrous consequences. And then the second part, if more short-term politically, is enormously important, saying that I'm going to continue to support Trump, but I'm not on the front lines anymore. And so that's how Hillary lost, when people were like, "Yeah, I guess I'm for Hillary, but I'm not going to do anything about it." And a lot of them stayed home. So
I'm actually shocked you're not bragging right now, because mm-hmm. I think that what happened today will have pretty severe ramifications for Trump. Because look, his approval rating is already incredibly low, and he is making so many enemies out of allies. And this Steve Bannon component of the electorate that supported him so aggressively is now kind of starting to question things.
Right, but I agree with you, mm-hmm. but I should say that. But there is a legitimate case to be made for the other side of that, which is there's a mellowing of the administration. The mellowing of the administration will at least mollify his opponents, in Republican opponents in the Senate. The people who are coming out and saying, "This just can't go on, this just can't go on. If you want legislation when we return in the fall, you have to get these, you know, some of these bad people out of your White House." So there's a sense that that is part of what could actually work in the favor of the White House. Well, I don't think it will. I would buy that argument,
so
too.
So I thought about that, and my response to that would be, There is no mellowing of the White House when, again, the fish rots from the head down, and Trump is the head, and he is not capable of being mellow.
But what of the Pence, Mnuchin, Cohn, Tillerson, Mattis, certainly, what of that crew that says, why do we have to have these crazies leading our way right now? And as you get rid of the Sean Spicers, you get rid of Scaramucci, who was there for a half hour, and you get rid of Bannon, that it makes them more like what a Republican administration would be, so that then they go to Congress and there isn't this fight.
Let me agree with all of you and settle everything. the parts that I agree with that I think are so important. Yes, Michael, policy-wise, it might help him in the short term, where the Republican senators go, okay, we got rid of that clown Steve Bannon, and now the Republicans are back in charge.
Cenk, I want to clarify, I don't think that's right. Like, I don't think that will work. I agree with what Anna's saying. I think this will hurt him.
Yeah, but it might stabilize it, and it's just a might. It might stabilize it enough to pass the giant tax cuts. That is their only goal, okay? So that's the thing that's now 50-50. Before, I would have said they're definitely going to pass the giant tax cuts and then Trump will be gone. Now he's so wildly unstable, the fish rot so far down that they might not be able to do that, and they want to do that so badly, and they all agree to that. And that's why Cohn's there in the first place, the Mnuchins of the world and all the Republican senators, they want those tax cuts, and all their donors agree, everyone wants those tax cuts. So now they've got they're back on course for maybe at least executing that and then see what happens to Trump. But in terms of electoral politics, this is the beginning of a death knell for the Republican Party.
Yes.
So, because what Trump should have done is he should have had a plan. And okay, who am I going to side with? Or what delicate balance am I going to pull off here? Where I bring in the previous and the establishment guys, and I need their help in getting those policies passed in the Senate, but I'm going to appeal to the alt-right to get my electoral wins, and every once in a while intimidate the Mitch McConnells and the Jeff Flakes of the world, because I have the electoral base to be able to do that. Now we know, and I told you from day one, that Trump is not smart enough to do that. He's never balanced anything in his life. He just goes straight in one direction, and usually it's towards a brick wall. So now, given that he has no ability to balance anything, he should have at least picked one side. And so he couldn't make up his mind, so he fired the establishment side, Reince Priebus, Sean Spicer, so much. Then he brought in his own guys, Scaramucci, and then fired them. And then the alt-right guys, and he fired them.
Yes.
Because he's a clown. He doesn't know what he's doing. So now he's in no man's land.
So again, making enemies out of allies, and those allies have their own supporters. And this quote, I think, is pretty important. It's an unnamed individual who spoke to the Hill, but he or she, I'm guessing he, is a huge Bannon supporter. And here's what this person had to say. Steve's allies in the populist nationalist movement are ready to ride to the gates of hell with him against the West Wing Democrats and globalists like National Security aide Dina Powell, Jared Kushner, Ivanka Trump, Gary Cohen, and H.R. McMaster. He continues to say they should all be very worried that their efforts to undermine the president will be exposed. If they think that's what's happened with Steve is rough, wait until they see what he does outside the White House.
Yes, and Kurt Bardella, who used to also work at Breitbart, today wrote that he will, quote, Bannon will, quote, try to bring everything crashing down, and he will feel liberated now, and he will likely relentlessly attack Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, along with all the people that Anna just named inside the White House.
Also, it may become very difficult for the American prospect. They're going to wake up to a lot every morning, in a lot of incoming from Steve Bannon.
So it'll be, now we go to a new stage now. So my guess as to how this will evolve is in keeping with what I've said so far. Now he's opened up a new line of attack and against himself, Trump has. And so alt-right will now be attacking his administration. So he'll start to lose more and more Republicans as we go along. And a lot of Republicans had already turned on him. Matt Drudge has in a lot of ways turned on him, which is surprising. Some Republicans turned on him when he went after Jeff Sessions. So now that's beginning to erode a little bit. He's still holding his voters, Remember the focus group we talked about earlier in the week? 25 out of 25 would still vote for him. But now his strong support has gone down from the 70s down to 59% and still dropping. And now it'll drop a little bit further because they care more about this than any liberal position, whether the liberals are mad with him or CNN's mad at him or moderates are mad at him. And then eventually when Trump goes, and I think he most certainly will, then you've got Pence left. And then the Republicans are super screwed because then the alt-right has gone, the Trump voters are gone, and all they have is establishment Republicans left. And when you just have the establishment left, ask Hillary Clinton how that turns out in a party. So if the left has two brain cells to rub together, and by that I mean the establishment Democrats, which they largely don't, but that's okay, we could beat them in the primaries. And the left goes populist, it is going to be a landslide. For the establishment Republicans cutting off their nose here, whether it's despite their face or not, and throwing away their populist base, electorally will be a disaster for them. And so this is great news for the rest of the country.
Question for both of you. Do you think Steve Bannon is more effective inside or outside the White House?
Well, okay, that's a great question, Michael. And I think the answer is he was already at his peak and he doesn't know it. Mm-hmm. He thinks, oh no, I'm gonna come out and I'm gonna go back to Breitbart and we're gonna get the gang back together again et cetera. No, you guys are at the peak of your power. Trump is going to resign at some point. And then you're going to be amazed to find out how little power you have, what a small minority you are in the country. You're never, ever going to be able to put together candidates that win elections again, because the country is not alt-right. We are not neo-Nazis. And yes, there's a part of the Republican base that likes that, but who are they going to cling to? Because the rest of the Republicans don't like that. The Republican establishment, I mean, does not like that. So there's not a lot of alt-right candidates that are gonna come out and succeed. From here on out, look, of course I could be wrong and I'm sure that people will disagree, and certainly the alt-right will go, oh yeah, you're crazy, we're only gonna get stronger and stronger. No, you had your heyday. From here on out, it's just nothing but down for you guys. So I think that he now feels like, oh, I'll get him. No, it doesn't, that's it. Today was your peak and you're going forward. Yes, from time to time he'll lash out, he'll make a difference. There'll be a clash, there'll be some degree of power, but eventually it'll dwindle until you go, oh, remember those alt-right guys?
right.
And yeah, They'll largely go to the dustbin of history.
So I don't think that Trump's gonna resign. I think that, you know, he will maybe get impeached, but he will leave kicking and screaming. That's my speculation on it. Obviously, this is all speculation.
However he leaves, he'd leave kicking and screaming.
Whether that's true, even if
he serves two terms and he flies out on Air Force One on January 20th, 2024, or 5, whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
That always kicking and screaming.
But I don't think that Bannon is going to be as effective now that he's not in the administration. And it's because I think that his strategy will probably be to attack the administration, right, maybe even attack Trump and try to maybe coerce him to toe a certain line that appeals to the alt-right. But Donald Trump doesn't operate that way, right? So he's not coercible, and he usually will compound a bad situation.
Oh, that's a great point by Anna. Now that you said it that way, Anna, I just saw the future for a second. So Trump won't be able to help himself and he'll start attacking the alt-right and thereby screw up his base even worse.
I think that's likely to happen.
To do a little John McLaughlin, you're both right, correct. Yeah, you're never more powerful than when you have the president's ear every day. Yeah, and that's really what it is. He won't have the president's ear, he won't be in it, and he will not be as powerful, except for like what you said. Just once in a while, there'll be something that pokes at the White House or at some of these people they don't like. But I think that his power is like this, that he has, as you said, peaked.
Hashtag dustbin.
Dustbin. Where is the dustbin? We asked before. Where's the dustbin of history?
All right.
I don't know, but we'll ask Steve Bannon in a little while. Right. He'll know. He's about to find it.
We got to take a break.
We got to take a break, guys. We got to take a break.
Let's take a break.
Let's do that. And when we come back, some updates on more Confederate monuments coming down. And then later on the show, you do not want to miss it. Inside the women of the alt-right, super interesting story. Don't want to miss that, so come right back.
back on the Young Turks. We were just talking about, I was on the phone with somebody today, and they're like, what's your name? And I said, Cenk Uygur. And they're like, okay, Yank, hold on a second. I'm like, but you didn't even see it spelled. Like, if you saw it spelled, okay, you say Yank, Hank, Cenk, whatever,
you
right?
You said it to him.
I said Cenk, and right. He's like, all right, Yank.
All right, Yank. It was the Uygur. It was the Y of Uygur.
Maybe. Anyways, all right, let me read you some tweets. Nels writes in, LMAO, does all this firing and hiring in the White House count as Donald Trump's job creation numbers?
That's good. Right?
It's a bit of a wash, but
right. Yeah.
Davey M says, so when Trump resigns, it'll be President Pence, and many will leave, will heave a sigh of relief. That gives you some idea of how bad things are.
right.
It's true. When we're like, yes, President Pence.
Not Pence, right. And a lot of Democrats, by the way, think that the timing of getting rid of Trump, you don't want Pence there too long before he has to run for president. Mm-hmm. That if he's there for a very little bit of time, it helps whoever the Democratic candidate is, which I, you know, it's interesting, deep politics, you know.
Yeah, and to go along with the deep state. And that one guy kind of builds off that a little bit. He wrote in, the tax cuts are going to happen because once Trump's done, Pence will be in, and then it's going to be business as usual. It's a great point.
It's a good point.
Whether Trump does it or not.
The question is, what kind of a Senate and House will Pence have by the time?
Yeah, is it before or after the 2018 elections? What will be the ramifications of Trump, whether he's in office or out of office for 2018? And will they be able to turn it around quickly enough? And the other reason that they like Trump is because Trump's tax cuts are so irresponsible and monstrous that the donors are like, really? $7 trillion in tax cuts? Okay.
Yeah.
So whereas Pence wouldn't have the balls to say $7 trillion, he might lowball it with $3 to $5 trillion. See what I'm saying? Right.
So the markets reacted to Bannon getting fired, and they reacted favorably.
Like, yeah, because it reduces instability.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That except makes for sense. Any stocks I own, which went down. But another tweet, Jameson tweeted at us. Perhaps the most overlooked part of Bannon firing is what it means for the for Mercer and the donor support.
Oh, that's a good point.
Really good point. Yeah. Because you know you.
So yeah, there was one part of the articles that talked about how a lot of the donors had called and said, "Keep Steve Bannon." I don't believe that. I believe most of the donors are not all right. They just want tax cuts. With the great exception of the Mercers. Mm-hmm. The way they have supported Steve Bannon throughout, the way they have supported the alt-right movement throughout, the Mercers fund Breitbart.
Yes.
Breitbart would never make any money if it wasn't for the Mercers. So they're not getting investment to make money. They're getting investment as charity, as propaganda. So, I know the insides and outsides of the business. That's why I could tell you that with significant confidence. So, the Mercers are likely white nationalists. Yeah, you think, oh well, they're billionaires, or they're not billionaires, but they're incredibly rich and they're very successful.
Are they not billionaires? I would have guessed they're billionaires.
No, I think it's hundreds of millions. Yeah. but they spend a lot of it on politics. I think he's a white nationalist. I think that's why he supports Breitbart and Steve Bannon and loves this alt-right stuff. Like, we're missing the obvious thing right in front of us because you assume financial industry probably cares about the money. Probably doesn't care about being white nationalist, but every indication is he does. But all the other donors, I don't think care, not all, but most of the other Republican donors don't care about that stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, last one. Rule James says Bannon being dumped is just a smokescreen to get people to stop calling Trump a racist, but there's still a racist in the White House. Yeah. Yes, and I pounded the gavel on this yesterday. I'm not having a debate anymore about whether Donald Trump's a racist, and I'm not hesitating in saying it. He is clearly 100% racist. Okay, so we can move forward.
All right. Annapolis, Maryland has made the decision to do away with a Confederate monument. Now, this monument is different from what we reported on earlier this week with Baltimore taking down Confederate statues in the middle of the night. Now, workers began removing the statue of former Supreme Court Chief Justice Robert Taney, who ruled in favor of slaveholders in the infamous Dred Scott case at about 12:20 a.m. on Friday. So, it happened this morning, and as you guys can imagine, they are purposely taking down these monuments in an effort to prevent controversy, violence, the type of scenes that we saw during the hate rallies in Charlottesville, Virginia. Now, the decision comes after Maryland Governor Larry Hogan, who is a Republican, called for the statue to be removed days ago. Larry Logan did say the following: "While we cannot hide from our history, nor should we, the time has come to make clear the difference between properly acknowledging our past and glorifying the darkest chapters of our history."
That's now, a great quote.
Yeah, that is a great quote. And keep in mind, when they take down these Confederate statues, they don't throw them in the garbage. They're removing them and putting them in places that I would argue makes more sense. So either a cemetery that honors Confederate soldiers or a museum that talks about the history. Basically putting these monuments and these statues in its proper context. In this case, they're likely to go to the Maryland State Archives facility.
Yeah. So I agree with, in the end, bringing them to an archive or a museum or a Confederate cemetery. Those are logical places. And it's not to say that they shouldn't exist. Of course not, right? It's just a matter of, do you glorify them and do you honor them by putting in front of the state capitol or a courthouse or where they used to have a slave auction? Now, having said that, you'll be hard pressed to find people that are more opposed to the Confederacy than I am. And it is amazing that we're having this conversation. We still have to have a conversation as to whether we're opposed to the Confederacy.
We don't really have to. You're just opposed to it. It's implicit.
Yeah, but a lot of people defend it to this day, and they defend the traitors who betrayed this country. And so, part of why I'm so opposed to it is not just because they were for slavery, but also because they hated America, and I love America. And so if you're a fan of the Confederacy, as I've told you before, you should never chant USA, USA, because you're the exact opposite. But since I can't stand the Confederacy and the people who did this, I kind of liked where Baltimore put him temporarily. They put him in a waste treatment facility.
Right.
Well, they have to exist in context if they're going to exist. They can't just be at the state house. In Tennessee right now, Governor Bill Haslam, who has for a long time, actually, he's a Republican, has said that he wants to get rid of the statue to Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was a military tactician and a KKK member and a slave trader, who was honored with a park in Memphis and honored with a statue at the state house. He has ordered that that statue be removed. Now, the opposition to that in the past was so strong that they changed the rules of how you remove a statue to favor the people that want the statues to stay there. But they have to be in context. If you're a black lawmaker and you're walking by someone who has a statue who was a slave trader.
Right.
Come on, think about that.
And
right?
Not just
it
the
does
slave,
matter.
And not just the slave trader, people who defended.
Of course, in the case of Taney, question.
And I want to touch on that a little bit because we talk about the Dred Scott decision and I'm sure everyone knows what that is. But Taney was the one who wrote the decision. And when you read the words that he used, you can understand why people would find him or have a statue of him in a state house or in front of a state house so offensive. So I'm going to read you a part of his decision. He says, "The question is simply this. Can a Negro whose ancestors were imported into this country and sold as slaves become a member of the political community formed and brought into existence by the Constitution of the United States, and as such become entitled to all the rights and privileges and immunities guaranteed by the instrument to the citizen, one of which rights is the privilege of suing in a court of the United States in the cases specified in the Constitution? Taney ruled that black people were regarded as beings of an inferior order and altogether unfit to associate with the white race, either in social or political relations, and so far inferior that they had no rights and that white man was bound to respect, and that the Negro might justly and lawfully be reduced to slavery for his own benefit."
So now that you've read that, the alt-right will like him even more.
Of course.
But yeah. If you can't understand that African Americans don't want to walk past that guy on their way into the state house, well, there's not much we can do for you. That means, yeah, you're fine with racism. And Taney's decision was so disastrous, not only because it applied to slaves, and we had slavery in the country, and that was, of course, right before the Civil War, but because it also applied to former slaves. And they said, no, you're not a human being. I don't care what your legal rights are and whether you're slave or former slave. You're black. You're inferior to all of us. You don't even belong in this courthouse and have no rights. By the way, this is also the same period of time where the Supreme Court ruled that corporations are human beings and have all the rights of human beings. Now that got expanded as the years went on, and later in the 1970s, and of course famously in Citizens United, it got to mean that they can give political donations. But back then is when they decided corporations were people and had rights that citizens do, but black people who are actually human beings were not.
Right. Ironic that in the Civil War led to Citizens United.
Yeah. So Tanny, you know, his statue is being removed is a great day in America. And he was one of the worst Supreme Court justices with one of the worst decisions ever. That guy should not be celebrated. I think the waste treatment facility is a perfectly good place for him, but fine. And eventually move him to an archive somewhere where he belongs.
And guess what, Republicans? You can do this. You can order the removal of a statue and still wake up the next day and you're fine. And you're a Republican governor and you can go on governing and doing the things that a lot of people who of my ilk don't like. But you can still do the right thing once in a while, and it does not crush you. Mm-hmm. Do that. More of them did it. Haslam and Larry Hogan in Maryland. Good stuff.
And if you're black and you're walking past a Tanny statue, that's like being in Germany, being Jewish and having to walk by a Goebbels statue.
Yeah.
It's not acceptable. It doesn't mean that all Germans are bad today or even back then. But it means that we shouldn't celebrate Goebbels. We shouldn't erase him from history because we need to learn from it. Same with Tanny, it's an important part of history. But it doesn't mean that we should walk past him on the way to an official government building that represents all of us.
And you don't have to in Germany. You go to a museum and you can see what you want about Goebbels if you want to see that stuff. And that there's a lot to be gleaned and learned from it. And there is for Nathan Bedford Forrest and Judge Tanny. You know, it's important to see that history where it's meant to be seen.
Yes. All right. One other Confederate monument story that I want to quickly get to because I think it's pretty important. Massachusetts is a state that has only one Confederate monument. That monument is currently at the Fort Warren or at Fort Warren on George's Island. Now, lawmakers have decided that they want to do away with this monument, but they can't because it's on a national park. So to compromise this situation, they've decided to cover it in a box. Take a look. So first of all, this was a monument. Let's go to graphic 20. This was a monument that was specifically dedicated to Confederates who were imprisoned during the war and then died as a result. And so let me show you what the scene looks like now. Again, it's been covered with a box. It was commissioned in 1963 by the local United Daughters of the Confederacy, a now defunct group that promoted the idea that the war was not between pro-slavery South and anti-slavery North, but rather a battle for states' rights and a Confederate culture led by honorable men. So obviously this is the mythology known as the Lost Cause.
Yeah. Of course, you know, when I go through the South, I see bumper stickers all the time. I once went into a shop where they had all these things, hats, t-shirts, bumper stickers with liberals don't understand history and how, no, the Confederacy was about state rights and it had nothing to do with slavery. Unless you actually read history and the leaders of the Confederacy said, yeah, this is about our right to keep slaves. Very, very clearly, go read what the Vice President of the Confederacy wrote as to why they went to Civil War. And besides which, it's obvious, the whole thing was the state right to keep slaves. There was not another giant issue about, well, are we allowed to make cars or are we not allowed to make cars? No, it was about whether you could keep slaves or not. And so that's all that is total revisionist history. So the people who put up that monument did it on purpose during the civil rights era to rub it in black people's face, like, hey, we're still in charge. So the fact that they have it in a kind of a coffin now is wonderful to me.
Yes.
And you know, all the guys who say in the South, oh, it was a war of Northern aggression. Okay, no. If it was, great. I'm glad we
aggressed.
We aggressed, and I'm glad we freed the slaves. If we hadn't, you'd still be enslaving them. So it was the best aggression I've ever seen, the most humane, just aggression. And people in the North lost their lives to make sure that everyone in America would be free. So I celebrate the Northern aggression. And if you don't, you're stuck in history. And that's a sad day for you. And those Confederate soldiers, I don't want any prisoners of war dying, so it's a shame that they died. Am I glad that they were prisoners? Hell yeah. I wish that we'd have the North would have taken more prisoners more quickly and ended the war more quickly. I wish that Northern aggression was even more aggressive and would have finished the war much earlier, and we would have had a lot less lives lost and freedom for all Americans much quicker.
Yeah.
And what kind of general sends troops from the South into Massachusetts? They should definitely not get a statue. Stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Oh, I got a great idea. Let's go all the way up to Massachusetts. Yeah. They'll never cut our supply lines.
Statue, get this guy a statue.
All right, let's take one more break. When we come back, an incredible story about how both Democrats and Republicans in Congress are working together to do away with part of the Affordable Care Act.
All right, back on the Young Turks as usual. Breaking news, Steve Bannon has officially gone back to Breitbart as executive chairman. So that settles the question as to whether Bannon was going to go back to Breitbart. He will. It also settles the question as to whether he was leaking stories to Breitbart. He was. So there was some nonsense about, well, I mean, he's not in charge there anymore. Maybe it's someone else making the decisions. The fact that it took him approximately 7.5 seconds to go back to being in charge of Breitbart lets you know that every single story that Breitbart ran was directly from Steve Bannon. Yes, he was a huge leaker. Yes, all those stories were from him. And if you remember some of those stories, vicious attacks against Paul Ryan, saying he should step down. He famously once said that he was a limp dick. I think he added another adjective to that guy that Ryan was. He doesn't like McConnell. He doesn't like McMaster. He doesn't like any of those guys. He had leaked a lot about Jared Kushner. And while he was in the White House, he said, oh, no, your son-in-law? I would never. Oh, those guys at Breitbart. Oh, golly gee. Ooh, I'm going to have a stern talking with them. Okay, now we know that was all horse crap. It was Bannon all along. And if you thought Breitbart was vicious before, wait till you get a load of them now. But they can be vicious all they want. I think, as we discussed earlier in the show, they're going to have less and less power as we go.
Yep.
I agree.
Okay, let me read some tweets for you guys. They're both great. Woke Poppy writes in about the Confederate monument in a box now. Dick in a box?
Yeah, there you go. Really funny.
And because your name is Woke Poppy, which is also funny and has been applauded by Anna in the past, t-shirt. ShopTYT.com, okay, and Woke Poppy's gonna get one. There's a 15% off now, by the way, because of back to school. Can't believe we're doing back to school specials. Anyway, you have to put in the promo code TooCool if you're not Woke Poppy to get that discount, okay? ShopTYT.com. But I'm gonna give away one more t-shirt because Addy wrote in, I prefer statues of people who didn't lose the war.
Oh, oh my God, that was good.
I know,
good.
That's really good, Addy. Excellent work. Okay. And one from YouTube Super Chat. Story of Emeno writes in, every day feels like more and more gruesome reality. I think they wrote this yesterday. Today feels pretty good. I thank you all for providing the facts and stomaching such horrendous actions. Love, Jank and Anna. Thank you. All right, Anna, what's next?
All right. When it comes to the issue of repealing the Affordable Care Act, oftentimes a lot of the news is targeted toward Republican members of Congress or Donald Trump. But the managing editor of the Young Turks, Jonathan Larson, did some digging and found out that a bipartisan congressional group known as the Problem Solvers Caucus is working together to repeal a pretty important part of the Affordable Care Act that was supposed to generate $29 billion in revenue over 10 years. Now, it's specifically in regard to the medical device tax. And the medical device tax was a 2.5% tax that was implemented on the sale of medical devices. And of course, those working in the medical device industry absolutely hated it. So what did they do? They got their money together and went after both Democratic and Republican members of Congress to try to get them to repeal that portion of the Affordable Care Act. Now, the 40 or so House members who formed the Problem Solvers Caucus earlier this year include a roughly equal number of Democrats and Republicans. They unveiled a healthcare reform plan, including the permanent repeal of a 2.3% tax on medical devices that was temporarily suspended under Obama, but is set to resume on January January 1st. So January 1st is quickly approaching. They're realizing that the suspension is about to become undone. And so they're worried about it. And so they start spending even more money. And they're specifically targeting those who are part of this bipartisan congressional group. Now, members of the Problem Solvers caucus, on average, received $10,051 during the campaign cycle for the 2016 elections, as opposed to non-members of the caucus who averaged $5,749. The numbers do not include members first elected in 2016 for whom complete data is not yet available. So just to give you a specific example, there's the co-chair of this bipartisan group, Tom Reed, who's a Republican from New York. He received a total of $25,650 from the industry during the 2016 cycle. Now I want to focus on one specific corporation that makes medical devices. It's known as Stryker. Now the Stryker CEO, Kevin Lobo, has appeared on national television calling the tax a killer of jobs and innovation. But a TYT report found that Stryker's own financial documents suggest the company enjoyed considerable growth and financial success while the tax was in place. After the tax was suspended, Stryker announced it would expand one Michigan facility and laid off 50 workers in the process. Now, I love this report. I think Larson did a really good job digging in and figuring out what's going on. Let's hear from Jonathan Larson. He'll give us a little more context into this Stryker story.
Stryker's claims about the jobs impact of the medical device tax began to shift and even contradict themselves even before the tax took effect. On November 10th, 2011, they issued a press release. This was 1 year before the tax was even going to go into effect. Press release said that Stryker was going to lay off 5% of its global workforce. They had about 22,000 employees at the time worldwide. So they were going to lay off 5% of their workforce. That was according to their November 10th, 2011 press release. The same day, however, they submitted a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission about that planned layoff. And the SEC, as you may know, has very strict requirements about the veracity of the statements that you make to them. And here's what they said about those layoffs in that SEC filing. They said, quote, "These actions are being initiated to provide efficiencies and realign resources following recent acquisitions to allow for continued investment in strategic areas in an ongoing challenging economic environment and market slowdown in elective procedures." Nowhere in the filing did they mention Obamacare or the medical device tax.
So they were going to lay off people before this tax was even implemented. And then when the tax was implemented, they're like, look at what happened, this tax. We got to fire these people. We got to lay them off.
Yeah, so there's two parts of this story that I think John did a great job by with, and thank you for helping us hire him. One is the idea.
You're welcome, by the way.
Okay. One is how much campaign donations they take. Conveniently, the guys who are fighting on behalf of these companies take twice as much as people who are on the other side. I know the people who believe that money in politics is awesome will say that's just a wild coincidence, total coincidence. And the chair of this Problem Solvers Caucus takes approximately five times as much. Another wild coincidence. So the second part of the story is Jonathan does a great job, and you should read it, and we'll have the link down below. And he's done a story on this before about what the companies say. So what he does is he'll show them on TV going, oh my God, this tax is going to cost us so much jobs. It's a job killer. And then he'll show you that they bragged about how many jobs they created while the tax was in place. And then he'll reverse it because this tax actually got paused under Obama.
Yeah.
So they stopped doing the tax, and they're like, great, this will allow us to create more jobs. And as you see, and he's got it documented one after another. And the time, and it's amazing actually, at the time they said, oh great, this will lead to more jobs, they fire people.
Right, right. And in fact, the money that they save from repealing the tax never goes toward hiring more people. In fact, he has shown in case after case that what usually happens is the executives of the given corporation will take the money that they've saved from taxes and then buy shares of their own company to increase the stock value. Mm-hmm. So it's about hoarding the money for themselves. They don't create more jobs. In fact, it usually leads to the opposite outcome.
Yeah, and let me talk about the opposite outcome because the money when they do the stock buybacks mainly goes to the executives. Okay, so yes, that's the hoarding. But actually, the other stuff is worse, because they will say again in their SEC filings, where they're not allowed to lie. On TV, they can lie all day long, and on CNBC, Fox News, they're not going to get challenged on those. In fact, they're not going to get challenged on almost anywhere on cable news. In their SEC filings, they'll say, "No, we're going to use the money to consolidate, to do mergers and acquisitions, and so and to build more offshore."
That's right.
So when that means they're offshoring your jobs, and during mergers and acquisitions, they smushed two companies together. One company said, "Oh, we created 100 jobs." You know why? They bought another company. So they didn't create the jobs, those 100 jobs came from the other company. In fact, they'd laid off 100 people from the company they acquired. Yeah. So Jonathan is exposing all of those lies. So this whole mythology of don't worry, give corporations tax cuts, and out of the goodness of their heart and because of economic forces, they'll create more jobs, is just not true. And by the way, well, there's one other person culpable here, and that's Chuck Schumer. And Chuck Schumer has AngioDynamics, a medical device maker headquartered in upstate New York. And a lot of these legislators will use this as an excuse, and some of them will earnestly believe it. Well, that's in my state, that's in my district, right? Also, they give me a lot of money, that part they leave out. Okay, and the fact that they're in their state leads them to have more incentive to donate to their local senator. And so Schumer was one of the guys who were saying, oh, medical device tax. On that one, I agree with the Republicans and Mitch McConnell, of course, to his advantage, but not necessarily to the company's advantage. And that Problem Solvers Caucus with the Republicans and Democrats working together, the only problems they're solving is for their donors.
No. I have to elaborate a little more on what Schumer did, because it was so incredibly shady. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I guess I'm also still a little naive. Let's go to graphic 36. So in September of 2016, appearing alongside future Problem Solvers member, Representative John Katko, a New York medical device maker, Welch Allen, Schumer said that suspending the tax played a pivotal role in the company's creation of 100 new jobs. But that's actually not what happened. In fact, the announcement came 1 year after the company's new owner laid off 100 workers as part of its acquisition of Welch Allen.
Well, at the time, I mean, that's what's so great about Jonathan's reporting too, is he shows you the timing of when they said these things and when they happened and everything. So, but in that November 10th thing at the very beginning, most in a most pronounced way. But yeah, this is what politicians do. I mean, this is that's like 101. Go back to when they did hire. Doesn't matter that all those people have been let go since the acquisition, which I probably helped to facilitate in some way. But and I don't know in that case. I'm speaking tongue in cheek. But yeah, that's how they operate. So when you go and you do this, get this kind of reporting, and this kind of reporting points this stuff out, it's really important. So read this, and and you'll see.
So good.
And understand that the things that you see on TV are talking points. It just because you saw it on TV doesn't mean that they're verified or that anybody actually checked those facts. And when you go to check the facts, you realize that a lot of it is propaganda. And the television companies, which take a ton of money from healthcare companies in advertising, are happy to push that propaganda. The politicians who get a ton of money from donations from those same companies are happy to push that propaganda. But the minute you scratch the surface a little bit, you realize how false it is. And that's exactly what we're trying to expose here on the Young Turks. All right, rock and roll. Real quick, let's do
it. I knew you'd want to do it. Okay, let's do it. All right.
Real quick.
All right. Jason Kessler is the white nationalist who decided to organize the hate rally that took place in Charlottesville, Virginia. Now, he has let Fox News know that he's had to go into hiding because he has gotten so many death threats. Now, it's unsurprising that he'd get death threats. Death threats are just a common part of society now. And it is fair to assume that some of those death threats come from those on the left. And I also want to be fair to him. He did get attacked when he tried to hold a press conference after the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. And that did not go well. In fact, we have video from that. Let's go to video 4.
Her name was Heather, sir. Her name was Heather, Jason. Her blood is on your hands. Her blood
is on your hood.
Jason, what do you have to say for
yourself?
Give
me a little space. Give me space for this guy.
Jason, what did you try to tell the crowd today?
Okay. So this goes in a lot of directions. So first, of course, it's hard not to be amused by people who are in favor of white power running from
a band of white people there.
Yeah.
From a press conference that they organized. It doesn't look very powerful. That's okay. But overall, the main thing about attacking him or threatening him is don't do it. Don't sink to their level. You don't need to do it. The violence is their calling card, not our calling card. So you should. I think they should have let him finish that press conference. I'm not afraid of white nationalist ideas. I think they sound preposterous. And we're going to give you some of Kessler's quotes here in a second, and we'll shred those. But that's in the battlefield of ideas. And threatening. Look, man, you don't know where the threatening leads. Don't do it. And you start with Kessler. I don't know where it ends. And you shouldn't start with Kessler, let alone wherever it ends. Mm-hmm. So that's my strong opinion on that issue.
Yeah.
And it's easy to say, oh, but they're white nationalists. Of course, I know. We fight white nationalists every single day here on the show. But when you stoop to their tactics, it doesn't help anybody.
And when you get physical with them, when you get violent with them, you are essentially giving them a gift. Right?
Yeah, they love it. Then they get to, they love being victims.
But you can shout them down.
Right? Yeah. Please practice your First Amendment right and let them know what you think, but don't get physical.
Yeah, and by the way, in shouting them down, I also want to be clear about that. It, within the context of a Nazi rally, right, you get to have speech against them.
Right.
They have freedom of speech, you have freedom of speech. Within the context of an organized speech, I'd let any speaker speak. Again, look at this thing we showed yesterday in Seattle. Well, these alt-right guys, oh, we're gonna bring down Lenin's statue in Seattle. And since nobody paid him any mind, seven dudes showed up. When you just let them spout their nonsense, it's incredibly ineffectual.
By the way, that's what usually happens. That's what happened in Charlottesville. Charlottesville has had a rally once a month since May, at least once a month since May, since they announced that the Lee statue was coming down. It's only when they sort of made this huge convocation of white people, of haters, come there and have this kind of, you know, big group that this sort of thing happened. People kind of ignored them in Charlottesville at these small rallies. We didn't even know they were happening.
Right.
And so that's very an effective thing to do, is to just let them, you know, scream in a vacuum.
Let him scream in the darkness. Anyway,
all right. So let's get to the good parts of the story. So as I mentioned, Kessler let Fox News know that he's afraid for his safety, and so he's gone into hiding. And so again, while I certainly agree that there might be those on the left who are threatening him, there are also those on the far right who are also threatening him, which amazes me because they think he's part of some sort of false flag conspiracy and that he's actually a liberal who's just trying to make the white supremacists look bad. I'm not kidding. It's amazing. Now, first, let's start with his own conspiracies, okay? Kessler had tweeted the following. What occurred in Charlottesville was a conspiracy to violate my civil rights in violation of a federal court judge's order.
Now, the irony of that is so thick, it's just awesome. It's one of the best ironies I've ever seen. Now, of course, African Americans shouldn't have their civil rights, but you're violating my civil rights to say that. How dare you? Their lack of empathy is stunning. And the fact that they can't even see it shows also their lack of intellect.
Now, here's the super interesting part, okay? Pro-Trump far-right commenters are now trying to distance themselves from Kessler in the wake of the deadly Charlottesville riots, claiming that he was paid by the liberal philanthropist George Soros to invite several neo-Nazi and KKK groups to smear everyone attending, okay? So let me give you, this is amazing. Let me give you an actual quote from a far-right Trump supporter in one of these Trump Reddit forums or whatever, threads. He says, just did some digging and I found out that this little fuck was a leftist operative until when? You guessed it, November 2016. Oh my gosh, okay. Unite the Right is a Soros-funded honeypot, psyop, that employs the Pied Piper strategy to damage the Republican brand by insinuating that Antifa goons disguised as Nazis represent the views of the entire right wing in America.
Okay, so wait. All those guys on tape who said, you know, chanted blood and soil, the Jews will not replace us, Then later are made videos crying about how the police are going to get them, and said to commentators on the scene, "Oh, we're going to go get the Jew lovers." They were all actors, and by the way, stunningly good actors.
Great actors hired by, you know, nobody loves a Nazi more than George Soros, so he's just going to pay as much as he can to get one out there.
And, I mean, the reason Michael jokes about that is because George Soros has helped fund movements to help Holocaust survivors. I mean, he is nothing like what the right says.
Right.
He also fought communism and helped to topple communism in Eastern Europe.
Right.
So he's and he's a huge capitalist. He's a giant financial guru, right? And one of the top financial guys in the world, maybe in the history of the world.
Yeah.
He's deep capitalist, but they're like, "Oh, this leftist who loves the Nazis." It's insanity. So no. The left didn't have to make you look bad. You look bad. You do a good enough job of that on your own. That was your guys who showed up in your uniforms with the khakis and the white shirts and held the torches. So now this hilarious excuse of like, I think it was like a false flag, man.
No, but honestly, okay. So now they're angry. The far right Trump supporters hate Kessler. They think he's part of some conspiracy. And it made me realize something. Look, we can sit here and criticize what's going on with the right wing all we want, but it's not going to be as effective as the right wing eating one another. And that's what's happening right now. Like, they are just destroying one another, right? And so that party's imploding. That part of the electorate is imploding, and it's delicious.
And it's a microcosm of the White House. I mean, that's what the sort of the punctuation you can put on this day of all days is they're eating each other there too. So why not eat them? Eat each other in the streets and eat each other at the White House.
And it makes perfect sense on the day that Steve Bannon has left the White House, as Scaramucci famously said of him, that he likes to suck his own cock. Speaking of eating each other.
We were so close to just ending the show. It was just about to end. Anna was going to wrap it up. So, yeah, have a great weekend. We're going to be hour two. And then that.
Okay. You know what? We got to go. But last thing on Kessler, because I want you to understand what kind of a bad guy he is and how stupid he is. He said that he criticized the left for blaming American whites for slavery. And who else would we blame?
Right.
It was the Chinese, I tell you. It was the Chinese. And when asked about the victim, Heather Heyer, he said, "No comment." Oh, he's such a bad guy.
Yeah.
And that there's no acting involved there. Just a straight up bad guy. All right, guys. Much love. Thank you, Michael. Everybody check out Michael on I-24.
I-24 News.
We'll be right back. And we'll have that two great stories for you. What happens when white nationalists do their genetic tests? Mm-hmm. Oh, here you go. All right. And who are the women of the alt-right? And no, Michael, they're not centerfolds.
Okay. It just sounded like a Playboy feature. The women of the alt-right.
All right, we'll be right back.